You are listening to the For the Bros Tech Podcast, episode 173, where we're Googling Facebook for work.
Episode 173 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January the 18th, 2015. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Oscar-nominated brother, James Furlough.
Yep, I did get nominated for Best Movie Watcher of the Year.
Nice. It's a pretty good. It's a pretty good Oscar nomination.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched all the right movies and none of the wrong ones. I did pretty well this year.
Perfect. Did you pay attention at all to the nominations?
I watched the video where they rattled them all off. Yeah. And it was in an article where they were talking about the fact that there was no diversity in it. It was all white folks who got nominated. And I was kind of like, you know, and they were essentially making their official apology of like, yeah, we're sorry. We need to do a better job of seeking diversity. And I was like, why don't you just come out and be like, dude, white guys rocked it this year. Don't know what to tell you. Step it up. Clearly not politically correct and probably not accurate. But
especially considering the fact that Selma is one of the top movie contenders of the year. And you know, it's not like there weren't options. It just who got nominated.
Yeah. No, I would have thought that would have been funny. I didn't notice the one gaffe on the pronouncing of a certain person's name. Oops. Should I say poops?
Oh yeah, that was hilarious. Did you see the biggest snuff of it all? Snub, not snuff. That's different. The biggest snub of it all.
Yeah, someone got snuffed in that video. I totally missed it. No, I don't think I was smart enough to recognize it.
Let me see if this will help you out. So for animated feature films, the movies that were nominated were Big Hero 6, Box Trolls, How to Train Your Dragon 2, Song of the Sea, and The Tale of the Princess Koyoga.
Okay.
Nothing seems missing from that list.
Hold up. Yeah, well, is it actually a cartoon?
It's definitely an animated movie.
We're talking about a Lego movie, right?
Yep. And it's
nothing, huh?
It outranked. It got, according to Rotten Tomatoes, which I realize this isn't Rotten Tomatoes Awards, this is the Oscars, but according to Rotten Tomatoes, it outscored every single one of these except for The Tale of Princess Koyoga.
Well, that's it. I'm banning the Oscars. I'm not going to watch it this year.
I'm horrified. Boyhood's going to win Best Movie, which will make me happy. But
yeah, I watched the trailer, Jesse and I watched the trailer of a bunch of them. It was like Birdman. What is this? I was hoping for action movie. Turns out it's not.
No.
According to the trailer, at least. So we were like, no, we're good on that one. We watched Boyhood, still had no idea what the movie was about other than it took a really long time to do. And I'm like, wait, is this following him or is this like everything's fake and they just like took a really long time to do it? I can't tell. So I was just like too many questions and I was like, oh, whatever. I'll read about it later. Maybe. What was the other one? There was another one that was of interest. The Grand Budapest Hotel. That one actually looked like it was kind of funny.
It's Grand Budapest Hotel is great.
Maddie says it's great.
I loved it.
Is it based on an Agatha Christie novel?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe it's the Grand.
He's making it up and saying yes.
Grand Buda. I love having the background. The background wife. But yeah, it's based on the book, The Grand, directed, written by, it's inspired by the writings of Stefan Zweig.
Stefan Zweig does not sound like an Agatha Christie, but
it does not, but it's based
either way,
on
it's good.
Stuff.
It's good, huh?
Yeah, it's very good. I liked it a lot. Right. But Boyhood is unquestionably the movie of the year. It is a fictional.
Did you like
movie.
It?
Oh, I loved it. I loved
yeah, see,
it.
Yeah, see, I told you he loved it.
This is hilarious. No, seriously, like it was. It is a fictional movie. Starring that one guy who
has lived for at least 12 years.
At least 12 years. Ethan Hawke is one of the stars, but the kid was like 10. Was like six when they started filming, and a couple weeks a year, every year for 12 years, they filmed another scene, and you kind of get this like it's like a 3 hour long movie. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes, and yeah, it's great. I thought it was great. And highly recommend it.
What's the general premise of the film? I couldn't pick that up.
It's basically about his
is it like Boy Meets World condensed into 3 hours.
Yeah, without any of the comedy.
Without the comedy.
Or, okay. Yeah, it is a serious drama, but it's about his this
serious.
Kid.
I avoid yeah. serious movies.
It's about a kid growing up over the course of 12 years. But the crazy part about it, what I loved most about it, is that they do a good job of spotting pop culture over those 12 years, and so the music, the video games, the all that sort of stuff. And we're a little bit older than
That's
him,
cool.
obviously, but. We're young enough, like where a lot of the things that he was going through and the stuff that was going on around him or something that you will be familiar with and be nostalgic for. And so it's very, very good. I thought it was great. And it's just kind of a feat in filming because it's like 12 years of the same cast.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. Kind of similar to maybe perhaps Forrest Gump, again, without the humor in that, like, it spans multiple times and they make sure to hit all the genres and stuff. Other than, again, it sounds like less, you know, he's not like inserted in the scenes or whatever, but
yeah.
Interesting. All right. All right. All right. Well, those two are on my list to see.
Good. Yes. I agree with that.
The Lego Movie did not make it, man.
Did not make the cut. Very disappointing.
Well, I want to know what the criteria is. This movie is just, we don't quite want to go awesome. Cause if we do that, you know, no, there's just the obvious one who wins.
They didn't pay enough to get it nominated.
Yeah.
I don't mean to go all super cynical, but it's the only one on that list that didn't need the media help to sell more movies. So they made a financial decision to not push it because they figured they didn't need the advertising, which is what the Oscars is. It's a massive advertising campaign for, you know.
Sure, it worked for us. I'm going to watch two movies I wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Exactly. So you know what, James? We're not here to talk about the terrible media and how they try to act all wise and benevolent and care about the art, but all they care about is making money. This week, we're talking.
I do have one more. I do got one more question for you before we go to the real topic, though.
Okay.
Which team do you hate least heading into the bowl that is super?
Believe it or not, the Seahawks.
Yeah! Welcome to the PN Dub, bud.
It's literally the only other team in the entire league that could make me root for the Seahawks. The Seahawks are playing. I hate the Pats. I've hated the Pats since they cheated. I can't take it. I can't take the Pats. I can't even believe it.
So this is a dream come true for me. I have two employees, one of which is a diehard Seahawks fan, and the other one is diehard Pats fan.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. So I'm pretty pumped about this. We'll go out to lunch pretty regularly and we'll talk football, and these two guys have just been, we've been following all year and talking about it, and they've just been bantering back and forth, and now it's just like, oh man, I would love to just go watch the game with them together. Of course, it would be like half fun, half frustrating, but anyways, it's kind of cool, and I'm just like, Niners should have been in it. I don't know.
Yeah, right. But yeah,
I'm going for Seahawks. Anyways, all right. Good to know. Good to know.
All right. But this week, like every week, we won't be talking about other areas of massive money-making, like movies in football. We'll be talking about the massive market of money making that is technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by corporate opera, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James and I have a short disclosure we'd like to throw your way.
So my disclosure is twofold. Number one, I got a new toy.
What's that? Check
it out. It is this right here.
I see it, but I don't know what it is.
Looking at it, it looks like a really big hot dog, I guess is the way to describe it. It's about, I don't know, it's 2 inches by 2 inches by about 12 inches long. It's a scanner.
Woo!
Yeah! Got myself a scanner. Welcome to the 21st century. It's pretty sweet. It's battery operated. Connects to Wi-Fi, which means it can connect to my phone and my computer. It has, get this, digital OCR on it, which is...
Oh, yeah. I totally know what that is.
Cool. It is essentially what that means. It stands for optical character recognition, where when you, like, you scan at a page, you can say, you know, create it as a PDF, and it can actually pick up what the words are and make your PDF.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. But what's cool about it is it's because it's so small, it is highly, what's the word I'm looking for here? Mobile.
Portable.
There we go. And portable. Thank you. So we're going through this apartment project and we're starting to sign leases and stuff. And so I was like, oh man, I've wanted this toy forever. Now I've got a business excuse to buy it. I'm doing it.
Nice.
And so I did. And it's super sweet to be at the table signing documents. And like, they literally sign it and then you feed it in this machine. And then you're like, and you open up your phone or you're just like, give me a couple hours, whatever. And then you just, boom, here's the digital copy of everything we just did.
So who makes this?
Oh yeah. So it is called the Doxy scanner. Another good reason to get it. Doxie. I mean, I think it's like getdoxy.com or something like that. And they've got a bunch of different choices. I of course went for the premium one cause I like scanning stuff. And, yeah, it's pretty sweet. And
how much are we getting paid for this ad campaign?
Oh, yeah.
I want my cut.
Not enough. Not enough is what it is. But anyways, cool new toy that I got. I really like it. My other disclosure, and this is kind of the irony behind it, I work for a printing company named HP. however, I clearly do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. Though, for the record, I do own an HP printer that has a scanner on it, and I use the scanner more than the printer, except for business stuff. But anyways, that's mine. Now, I noticed you mentioned you had a disclosure as well.
I do a disclosure, too. I just want to let everybody know that I own Apple, like all of it, totally, completely. Okay, I own four stocks. Right. I own four shares of Apple stock. I met with Tim Cook earlier this week to discuss strategy and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But now that I'm officially an Apple shareholder, I think I just want to disclose that. Let everybody know that, hey, don't, you know, just be careful. Be cool, okay? When I make a recommendation, just keep that in mind.
When you buy that Apple Watch end of February, beginning of March, we need to just take that with a grain of salt that you're clearly biased now.
Exactly. I just unashamedly biased. Actually, I had this.
By the way, how much richer are you now? Are you still?
Oh, I'm not.
To the moon?
I'm not at all. I was like super upset. So the deal was, I put $500 into my Robinhood account, which for those of you who are keeping score, that's $4 short of being able to buy Google stock. And I came up with this. I thought it'd be fun to own Google stock because you say, yeah, I own a Google stock. Everybody's like, oh, that's expensive. That's kind of cool. So I came up with this brilliant plan. Buy Apple stock, ride that until it went above Google stock, until I was up at 504, sell my Apple stock, buy Google stock, right? This is my plan. I got within 20 cents of being able to buy a Google share the first day that I made the Apple trades. And I was like, okay, cool. Tomorrow, we're going to do it. I have since plummeted about $16.
And the best part about stocks is, like, percentage-wise, you literally have to do, like, twice as much growth in order to get back to that level again.
Yeah, thanks.
That's so funny. So you are an Apple shareholder / wannabe Google shareholder.
Yeah, that's That's the funniest part about it is I was trying, and somebody pointed out the fact, well, if Google's or if Apple's making you enough money to, and you're, if you made $6 there for like whatever it was, you know, your first day and Google only moved like 50 cents, why don't you just hold on to Apple stock? Because it's not as impressive. Apple stock is penny stocks, man. It's cheap. Okay. Anybody can buy Apple stock nowadays, which is kind of a ridiculous statement, but anyways, so yeah,
good disclosure. I love Thank it. You. Oh, this is the new era at Furlough Bros.
Right. Now I can legitimately whine and complain about stock as much as I want because it actually affects me. if you want to follow us throughout the week while we tweet funny things and show funny pictures, we're all up in the social media. You can go to my Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlough. My Instagram, which, let's be honest, that's where all the cool kids are, so that's where I do most of my posting, is NextWiggin4 with 2 G's and the number 4.
Have you noticed this trend? And it's okay if you haven't, but like a lot of new websites that are popping up, they have their share buttons are Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yes, I have.
And that's it? It feels to me like it's a recent trend, but maybe I'm just slow to the game. But I feel like there was a time, and I mean like I'm talking like less than a year ago maybe, where it was you had your Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest.
Reddit, Dig.
Yeah, less of those, but I was thinking like maybe LinkedIn, depending on the site that you're visiting. But you know, you had a there, and I guess the bottom line is there was a ton of them. Like, how many of these can we fit onto our page? And it slowly has like gotten whittled down to like, honestly, I care about Facebook and Twitter, and if you post a lot of pictures, Pinterest perhaps. But Instagram is clearly went on that list now, and it's not share this post on Instagram, it's profile follows.
Yeah, follow us on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting. Instagram's growing up so fast. No Snapchats yet. No Snapchat logo. Follow me on Snapchat or Snapchat. I don't know how that would work. If Snapchat could figure that out, we'd all be in trouble and that would be annoying.
They're going to try to. Don't worry.
Oh, I know. I know. So speaking of which, you can follow me on Instagram at James Furlough. You could also follow me on Twitter at James Furlough. You could try following me on Facebook, but I tend to keep that as like I actually know you status.
Yeah,
I'm cool like that. You can follow Matthew; he'll follow you. He's okay with it.
I'm a free.
Yeah, and I'm JamesFurlough.com everywhere else.
Beautiful. Cool. So I guess it's about time to get into the talk of the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. And only 18 minutes in.
Well, sometimes you gotta talk about movies, man. It happens.
Yeah, that's true. Which is okay. That's why people love us, I'd like to think. Or you know what? Unsubscribe. Okay? It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we're better than you.
It's okay.
We'll survive.
I'm gonna start it off. There's this cool video. I found it. It's called Theory and Hero. It's a Tumblr blog, essentially. And there's this guy named Dylan Markey, who is a, what is he called? A stop animation artist. Okay. And come to find out, stop animation is actually very difficult to do. In terms of like, just like physically, it is a tasking job. And it's one that is hard to do with with someone else. And I can't totally remember the company that he works for, but trust me, he works for a company.
Okay, I'll trust you.
And so what he was finding is he would do these shoots, and he's like, these are like 10-hour-long shoots where you're leaning over and you're slowly adjusting models and you're taking a picture, and then you're looking at all your previous pictures, building up to the current one, and you know, and you're changing each character and making sure you get everything just right. It's like it's a laborious task. And so there's this video that he did. It's a 7 minutes and 40-minute video, 40-second video. So I'm not going to share it right now. But if you go to furloughbros.com, I will have the link there for you to check it out. And essentially, he was like, he was trying to figure out a way to be able to control his machines without having to walk over to them every single time. Cause he was like, I was like, come on, this is crazy. I should just have something on me. And, his solution presented itself in a decidedly 25-year-old technology. Otherwise known as Nintendo's Power Glove.
Yeah.
Yes. So he like was doing some research online and was like, I just need something on my wrist, like a wearable type thing. And so he came across the Power Glove and was like, brilliant, this is exactly what I need. And so he teamed up with an electrical engineer, which was like a friend, his husband, essentially. And so they literally redid the circuit board to create a Bluetooth computer that used the Nintendo Power's, controller, I guess. And so they replaced the circuit board with a custom one so that he could control his stuff. And he was showing, he goes, yeah, see, I use the D-pad to go back and forth between the videos. My A button is to take a picture and my B button is to take a bunch of pictures or something like that. It's like, and then I can actually control all the other stuff with the other letters that are on here. Goes, and then the most awesome part is he goes, I added the sensor where when you fist bump with someone else, it just goes like effing awesome, because it is. And he talks about how he like uses tweezers a lot, and so he added a little slot on there for retractable tweezers so that nice. You can do something and just like go and they'll let off. But kind of a cool like story of a guy who, you know, he's doing a cool creative job, and it's actually physically tasking and just like saying, you know what, I'm going to repurpose some old technology here and get some help from an EE and just kind of, you know, make this work. I thought it was kind of fun. It's a fun video. It's worth watching.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. That sounds very cool. I like it.
That's my story. Fun cool. Little intro.
Sorry. I forgot distracted there right at the last minute. This is kind of a hard pivot, but Elon Musk, one of my personal heroes, I like the dude.
He's using future technology, not old technology, to change the world.
Yeah, no, he's seeing what's gonna come down the road. He's making what comes down the road. But in the last couple of months, Elon Musk has been talking a lot on the news and stuff. Freaked out about artificial intelligence and the coming doom of all of humanity, which is an interesting, you know, he's actually been made fun of a little bit, I think, unfairly, because you know it's Elon Musk. You gotta trust the man when he says this sort of stuff. But this is a side topic, but his acronym a SUD, I think is what he calls it. A sudden un, what do they call it?
Sudden unnecessary disruption?
No, it's a rapid,
I don't know,
unplanned RUD, a rapid unplanned disassembly of his rockets, aka it blew up.
Nice.
Yeah, he had one of those this week, and he was tweeting about it. But so he's been talking about the end of humanity and the coming, you know, enclave of robots that will kill us all, and how to prevent that sort of thing, and that we should all be afraid, very afraid. And it's caught the attention of quite a few people because they're like, you know, is it really that big of a deal? He's like, yeah, it's really that big of a deal. But you know, at the same time, he wasn't doing anything about it. Well, Elon Musk finally put his money where his mouth is. He has officially donated $10 million, not a small chunk of change, to the Future of Life Institute, for a research program that will focus on keeping AI, quote, beneficial to humanity. By beneficial, he means making sure the future computers will actually listen to us when they surpass our intelligence and not take matters into their own hands when they realize they don't need us. Yes. It's literally the, what's crazy is, so, if you read a lot of science fiction, a common theme in certain science fictions are the our artificial intelligence has run amok. One of the more famous ones is iRobot, and when the robots don't listen to us, and why do they do that, and what's, you know, in the three laws of robotics. And then another really famous one is the Neuromancer, and that one has artificial intelligences run amok and doing crazy thing. But there's a kind of a common theme in a lot of these types of movies, including like Blade Runner or in books and movies. And there's a thing called the Turing Police. And they're basically, their job is to go out, identify and protect us from artificial intelligences. In the case of Blade Runner, it's to identify androids and kill them because they're not supposed to be around, which the very fact that you're killing them is, you know, kind of an interesting debate within the book. But also, you know, in the Neuromancer, it's actually finding people who are helping set free. There are artificial intelligences with these like locks on them designed to protect us from them, and these people are trying to set them free. And I don't know, it's just a fascinating little, this is how it starts, man. We're going to look back in, you know, 100 years and say this week was the week that we really started the foundation of what would become the Turing Police. The guys that their goal is to make sure robots don't come and kill us all. Don't go all Skynet on us.
Yeah, that's not going to work out. But I just... A, computers will be... What?
Are you just... I don't even know where you're going with it. I'm just... You just seem very flustered by this idea. I want to hear.
Just A, if computers genuinely become smarter than us, they'll figure out a way to get around whatever rules or policies we create for them. Or B, there's going to be someone out there in the world who doesn't care. And, you know, I mean, it's like the do not follow trackback links or, you know, spam rules, right? Whatever. Yeah, we try. We set up these things, but, you know, whatever. It doesn't stop everybody. I don't know. It's like if he's really worried about it, he should get involved.
He's donating $10 million. How is that not getting involved?
Well, like, not just his money at an organization that's like, oh yeah, we're going to make sure this is all good. Someone did a very good job sales job on him. That's all.
I have a feeling, you know, and this is just my feeling. Maybe I'm being superly optimistic, but I'd imagine when you donate to $10 million to an institution, if you come in and say, hey, I got he's a CEO and an idea man. He comes up with the ideas and idea stuff, you know. It's like SpaceX. He doesn't sit there and do the engineering. Tesla, he doesn't sit there and design the interior. He's kind of the head honcho from an organizational perspective and sets the tone and expectations. And I feel like that's exactly what he'll do with this. And because he's paying all of their salaries, he's effectively their boss. So, you know, I don't know. I think this is something. I think it's more than nothing from an involvement perspective. And, you know, I think it's a big enough deal that, you know, somebody's got to stand up for the future of humanity, start the movement, you know? It's funny. It is a really interesting, when you get into super artificial intelligences and stuff, it is a super difficult logic game. And I've actually done a strange amount of reading on this, on that very question. Is it possible to design a computer that... is it possible to design an artificial intelligence that is smarter than you that you can control and, you know, and play the whole logic game out? And the reality of it is most scenarios are horrifying. And I think that's the most fascinating part about Tesla's dilemma is that you're right. Most scenarios with artificial intelligences actually end up exactly what you're saying, is they end up in Cataclysm. They either and so how do you prevent that? It's sort of like everybody's got a nuke. How do you stop the world from ending? We did it once, and that's really, I think, what he thinks artificial intelligence will be. There's this really interesting what is that?
Can you hear that?
Yes.
It's my wife. She's crazy. All right. But, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but no, it is this is actually, I think, a worthy topic for another time, but all of the horrifying ways that, yeah, we won't be able to control these things. And in, there's this thought experiment, about the idea of a malevolent program that gives you an option of, you know, you can, if you help it survive, if you help it become, if you help create it, it will allow you to survive. But if you don't, it will kill you. And so the question is, do you help it or not? And there are theorists that like are really, really bothered by the very asking of the question, because there's all these logical problems that come into like the very fact that somebody's asking the question. It kind of becomes a self-perpetuating, like, I don't know. It's craziness, but that's for a different time. It's an actual problem, though. It's a real problem. And that's what's fascinating. Anyway,
is there any sort of timeline on when this is all going to come to fruition?
Pretty sure in the next like 6 to 7 years.
Perfect. Cool.
Google is sprinting there as fast as they can, because they think the whole, you know, they talk about machine learning, but which, yeah, it's a machine learning is a foundation to an artificial intelligence that's a sentient artificial intelligence, and it's. They view it as the next step in getting better ad served to you, which is kind of, you know, terrifying that that's what's driving us forward. But it is what it is.
Okay. Well, you know what? That's in the future. But we currently have a sentient overlord right now.
We do.
And it goes under the name Facebook. And it controls all of our lives and connects all of us together and controls our emotions and feelings and behaviors, honestly. So, since they've conquered all of that, it's time to move on to new territory. And that new territory is the work environment. So here's the question. Do we set up a Furlough Bros Facebook account so that you and I can have a social network between the two of us and we can share photos and so let me back up a little bit here.
All right, first off, yes
we will. So the idea is you have an organization, okay, and oftentimes you want to share stuff within that organization. Work-related stuff, I suppose. And there have been a bunch of companies out there that have tried to facilitate this, and none of them have really caught on, just because it's like, oh, one more app we got to do. HP even made its own internal one called 1HP, which I'm not surprised they're not using it anymore now that we're becoming 2HPs, but that's a different thing.
That's fine.
And so Facebook has decided, you know what? We've got this platform. Let's create something specifically for work environments. So remember how back in the old days, you could sign up for Facebook only if you had a certain .edu address, and at first it was restricted to certain colleges?
Yes, I do remember that.
And you could really only add people in your network from that college?
I don't remember that part, but yes.
Okay, all right. Maybe that's not true. Maybe I just made that up, but whatever. Imagine that was true. Facebook is bringing that back.
Finally. So
you will be able to say at furloughbros. You know, let's say you have an email address, which is like furloughbros.com, which we have, right? James at furloughbros. I should not do that right now. And and you have one. And that's probably cool. James at furlobros.com, Matthew at furlobros.com. We'll get you
emails. Thanks. That's what I wanted.
There you go. It's okay.
James, that was for internal communications like this. This is the extent of our internal communications.
Yes. So anyways, if you had an email address like that, you could sign up for Facebook at work, and then you would. I don't think you would automatically be connected with, but you would definitely be able to see other people in your network, you know, and become friends with coworkers and share information. It could be the mundane stuff like, you know, hey, I'm on vacation this week, suckers, and here's a picture of where I'm at. To potentially like uploading documents and sharing internal reports and other stuff within your business community. There was one that was actually getting pretty popular, and I don't have their app on my phone anymore, where it was a social network for businesses. I can't remember what it's called now. No. It was...
Sorry.
No. But it was this idea of... It was very similar idea, and NHP eventually was like, you can't post anything on there, essentially. They're like, can't put anything confidential on there. So it was like, all right, well, there goes all business communications. So HP's not going to be using this either, but that's besides the point. The idea being, again, that it's an internal intra network between just your company, and it requires people to have your company's, I'm guessing, email address is how they're going to monitor all of that, so that you can just share between, maybe it's Yammer. I think it's Yammer is the name of it. You can just share between your coworkers. Do you have any sort of tool like that in your company?
Yeah, it's called
communicating slash sharing.
Gotcha.
And
yeah,
email.
Yeah, my company's so small that
you don't use Slack.
No, we don't. Well, honestly, we all have iPhones and iPads, so when we need to communicate really quick, we text each other a lot. And
there you go.
So that's been, and because we're all on on iDevices, we all iMessage each other. Occasionally we do FaceTime and whatnot, but yeah, that's been kind of our strategy. But we're a small company, and we're all within walking distance. That's the other thing. So, but I like this idea. I like it because I you know, one thing that's okay. To think about how I'm going to say this. I'm not friends with any of my coworkers on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's not entirely true. But I did that because I don't want my coworkers. I want to be able to filter everything I say to my coworkers, kind of. I realize that most of this stuff is all searchable, so I try to, like I always say, it's not private. If it's on the internet, it's not private, so I try to make sure nothing goes onto Facebook that I would be horrified for them to find out is on there. But at the same time, it's kind of nice to not have it constantly in their face, you know? There's a certain cushion if you're not in their newsfeed. And so I avoid friending them, but it would be nice to be able to, you know, have that connection. That's kind of a funny thing I've done in the past, where it's like when I leave a company and get fired, whatever, I immediately friend everybody as I'm leaving. Finally, they're like, we weren't friends on Facebook. I was like, heck no, Tech. No, I don't want to be your friend on Facebook until we're, you know, just friends. It'd be weird.
See, I've been cool with, like, coworkers, but it's bosses and supervisors where I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I've been slowly wearing away that I've got a few coworkers that are friends on Facebook. But, yeah, because, I just, like I said.
But now you could friend them through this Facebook at work and not have to worry about that, because they're only going to see the post that you put there.
I like that. I do wonder, like... are they treating this like a Facebook group kind of where you can only be part of it if you're part of their access. Because one thing that I want is I want to be able to do that. I want to have that separation. But that will actually mean that I'm less connected via, regular Facebook.
They say that you can actually have you can do a single sign-on type thing and then just toggle back and forth between the two. But the idea is you're like, this is personal Matthew, this is work Matthew. And they are two very separate things.
I like that.
Or you could have the Furlough Rose Matthew, where you and I could share stuff that no one else could see, which seems semi-pointless, but we could do that and have internal discussions about our podcast ideas and what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we could, in theory, post our links on there, and that's what we draw from during the podcast. We're not going to do that. That sounds highly non-efficient. But that's kind of what that idea is, and it helps with those fears that you were having. And depending on your company's terms and services and, social media, I don't know what the right word is, level of scaredness, a la like Elon Musk, you may have actually be able to share internal stuff on there.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah, that is a... I've had talks with some people about the idea of what they won't share on. I know I've talked with people who will not send offer letters to candidates if they use a Gmail account because the belief is and these people aren't just crackpot tinfoil hats. They're like real competitors and it's just kind of well understood.
I wonder how I feel about people like me who signed up for Google Apps before they required you to pay for it, and I don't ghost in Google.
Yeah, right.
Interesting. Wow, that is pretty tinfoil hat.
Like, yeah. Right there. Yeah, and yet, and so it goes back to that same thing with Facebook. I think people would still be fine using it for social sharing within a company. Yeah, it's an interesting, it's funny. I mean, like, I think there's obviously a space. I'm not sure exactly what it looks like. I'm not sure Facebook knows exactly what it looks like, but we've always talked about the idea that one thing they can improve is their push into
the office.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enterprise. And I'm like, I could see, them resurrecting their messaging stuff. If you can, in theory, follow specific people, which would be cool, and get their updates and have groups for like your team and whatever, but then you've kind of got your company directory on there essentially where you can message anybody live and you don't have to, you could use that. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I can just see everybody and access them. I don't necessarily get all their updates because that's not what I want, but I can have my short list and whatever. I could see where, they do that, and that starts to replace email. That could be kind of cool. If they really got into like, if they refined their events a little bit more to make them more meetings type things, you can invite specific people to. I don't know. It's kind of like though Microsoft has kind of solved all of this already, and. So is Google.
Well, but. Yeah, I mean, but they've solved all the enterprise communication, but they haven't solved the network thing. I mean, and the whole just the updates and the homepage and the people like me. It'd be nice to be Facebook connected with these people without having them, but have the walled garden of my Facebook, to have two different profile pages, my professional one and my personal one. And although there's not a hard, although my personal one doesn't, you could set that up where you put your privacy standards are very high. You have to be specifically invited to it. So you're kind of, you do have sort of a wall there. And I know a lot of people that would appreciate that, they go out of their way to, I've talked about it on the show before, but girls that go by their first and middle name on Facebook so that they're hard to search for when they're applying to jobs and trying to get real life going. And you know, because they're trying to hide their socialize and stuff. And if you could do that in such a way where, yeah, you do, you have like one wall and then the work stuff that you can make easily available and everybody can get to. I think there's real potential for them to expand even more and get a new use case. That makes sense.
So do you think this product will be a success or just another one of those things out there that Facebook has? So, and to preface that, the guy who's in charge of this, his name is Rasmussen. He's got a first name as well. I can't remember it, though. You might sound familiar because he was working on Google Wave before that went down. And so they are releasing an iOS app and the rest of it. It's kind of a beta type of thing, so they can get feedback from people. So they've already come out and said this isn't it, and we know that this guy already has one flop on his hands.
Was it a flop though, or was it just Google being Google? We've talked about Hangout before. I mean, it was frustrating because we actually were using it, but it's well known that they were pioneering a new way to, you know, every character gets transmitted and sort of those super up-to-date stuff. And most of the technology that made the Hangouts work are Wave. Still actively Wave work are still actively at use at Google today. So I wouldn't give it – I mean, as a social network, yeah, it didn't succeed. But I never believed that was what they were really trying to do.
Okay, so, fair enough. So do you think it's going to stick around?
Well, not it's not going to – I think you won't be able to tell this year. I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because they could just keep it up there and just stop updating it, and it's still available, still can use it. But
I could. Oh, man, it's tough. It's tough. I could see it because it's talking about a group of people at a certain age, and it's got a use case for younger people who want to, you know, keep those things separate. You know, it's got a use case for older people. It's got, I don't know, it's got a use case. If you can make it simple, and I think this is going to be the trick, making it really simple.
Wow.
To make the switch between and up of a profile, it just sort of, you hit a button and to open up this new sort of protected part of your profile. You know what I mean?
Okay.
If they do that, I see it being very pretty successful.
Okay. All right. But I think 2 years from now we'll be like, oh yeah, there's this thing called Facebook Work. It didn't.
I will look forward to that pun.
Yeah. So, the Goog, what are they up to?
The Geek, so Google, this I think is just cool. I've been kind of following this technology, and I don't even know what it's going to be used for or if it makes sense or whatever, but I just kind of, I'm excited by it. But Google is, they did it, they had their second big conference talking about Project Aura. And do you know what Project Aura is?
No, I don't.
It is their modular cellular smartphone solution. So the whole concept behind it is, you know, traditionally for PCs, we lived in this time where, you know, you'd have a big box, and inside the box you'd have a motherboard, a CPU, disk drives, hard drives, buses, RAMs. And a lot of these components were interportable, and you could move them around, and you could try different stuff out, and you could upgrade your CPU, or you could upgrade your motherboard, or you could build these upgrades and sort of custom build these machines to what you need with different use cases. And a lot of PC makers loved that. A lot of people thought it was great. And then sort of with the advent of mobile computing, and this was already a trend, but it's become even more hardcore this way. We've come to the place of the system on a chip and everything soldered to the board, and there's none of that upgradability. There's none of that changing. There's not a, none of that, I, you know, customization. It's sort of, there's a one size fits all solution. And, you know, pioneered, well, I mean, we were heading down that direction in a big way with mobile computing. Apple, I think, really put the final nail in that. And the reason why that happens is because it's really difficult to build modular stuff. The whole idea of the motherboard, you know, back in the day when everybody was building computers to begin with, personal computers, the motherboard was this sort of central thing to there are a bunch of different companies working on different technologies. One guy was building the CPU. One guy was building RAM. One guy was building the hard drive. One guy was building this. And so the motherboard allowed you to tie all those things together. So it was sort of a necessary technology with a lot of advantages. Well, in mobile computing, the guys that build RAM, the guys that build CPU, the guys that build hard drives, they all sit in the same office building nowadays. They all design their stuff on a program and then, you know, produce it out of one piece of silicone, and you get the system on a chip, or the SoC as it's called. Well, Google decided that they want to give it a go to try it the old way in smartphones. So they came up with what they call Project Aura, which is the idea a modular smartphone. So you would have a screen that they call the spiral, and it would have a number of open slots in the back that you could put different modules into. And the examples they give are a camera, a Wi-Fi Bluetooth antenna, a USB charger, battery, obviously, LTE antenna, 3G modem, different sensors, a Marvel, PX, and different processors, stuff like that. And these little modules will slip in and slip out. And the whole idea is it'll be the size of a smartphone, which you would want it to be, and that everything would kind of pop in, pop out. And as, for example, better camera modules come out, instead of saying, you know, me right now, my only real problem with my iPhone 5 is I want a better camera. I'd love a better camera. And they say that's very common. People will upgrade because of one feature in smartphones. Well, they sit there and say, well, what if you could just fix that one feature? There's a better battery that came out, so I want just a better battery. Or there's a better CPU, so I'm going to get the better CPU. And all these different types of options. Well,
or you could say, I care more about photography, or I care more about battery life, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you. One example is the idea that you can pop out. Let's say you don't need Wi-Fi, but you want more battery life. So you've got a module that will pop into the Wi-Fi thing. That's an extra battery. There's all sorts of different little.
Yeah,
things.
You're going on vacation. You're like, I want bigger camera, bigger battery, and bigger storage. You know, everything else, I don't care about. I don't need Wi-Fi, whatever, because I'm abroad.
Yeah, so this is...
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool, clever idea, and they're really excited. They're trying to come up with... You know, they're trying to cover all the basics of a smartphone first, but then there's other ideas of, like, making very niche-specific additions for different, you know, medical field or different engineering or different scientific equipment, stuff like that. There's all sorts of things that they're talking about. They say the current Spiral 2, they said they've acknowledged that it's got quite a bit of work to do before R is consumer ready. The Spiral 3, they want to bump everything up to a 4G LTE. The current one's just 3G. They want to get more space for batteries. They're pretty happy with the processor speed. The camera's pretty sad. It's a 5-megapixel camera. They want to get that up for Spiral 3 as well. So this is like their third generation of stuff. They said one of the problems that they run into is that all things being equal, just the nature of the modular cell phone, there's a 20 to 30% hit on battery life. So their goal for Spiral 3 is to get to an all-day battery. So Spiral 2, it's still very much in prototype sort of phase is what they're getting at. They want to get to the point where they're still concerned about the battery lasting all day. Now, in their defense, you just have two batteries and you can pop in a second battery and you're on the go again. So there's not, you know, it's not, I don't think it's horrifying that they are where they are, but you know, it's not nothing. But yeah, it's really a cool engineering platform program, and I'm excited to see what they're doing with it. And there's like all sorts of little things too. Like they've got these electromechanical magnets that hold all the modules in place, because one of the concerns is, what if you're in the middle of doing something and you accidentally pull out your RAM or I guess you couldn't do that, but you know, pop out a module and stuff. So they got these really cool ways of latching everything in there so that they slide out when they're supposed to and stay in when they're supposed to, because one of the problems that they ask is like, what if the batteries die? Do all the modules just fall out? We can't have that. So they have to have like these, the ability to turn on these semi-permanent magnets that will turn on and hold the modules in place even when the power goes away. So they're overcoming challenges like that, which is really fascinating.
What are some examples of, of modules, and, you know, and I'm looking at the back of this case going, all right, I see a camera. Presumably one of those is the battery. I don't see a charging thing, so maybe one of them's for the charge. Maybe a hard drive, is that another one?
Well, yeah, so more hard drive space would be a big one. But they come with, like, one of the ideas is, like, a speaker module. So you plug it in, and you've got to suddenly, instead of Wi-Fi, you have a really high-quality sound output. Or, you know, better battery. Another idea is a pollution sensor module. And with these, like, more niche-specific things, they're like, well, they don't have to be super compact anymore. You can say, well, the sensor module takes up a lot more space, it becomes bigger, so you just snap it in when you need it, and then all of a sudden you got sensors. And so, or you know, you want, let's say you want yours to be like a camera, you can get a much brighter LED light, you know, set on it. You know, you could use them in, cool. You know, yeah, there's just a lot of really cool ideas, and part of the advantage here is that the idea that really, as long as the system on the chip is kind of all in one, and it can communicate to the rest of the system. And this is kind of it's funny, like part of the whole thing was the frustration with, you can't swap all these different things out, but because the computer sits, the entire brain of the phone sits in one little chip, it suddenly allows them to actually do this, where you can have all these different components that sort of move around and stuff. And I could see, my prediction, real popular module is going to be a Zigbee module, which is it's a wireless communication protocol that's used alongside Bluetooth and Wi-Fi for a lot of developer type stuff. And they use them a lot for controlling drones and things of that sort. So I could see that being able to pop in and out. That's cool. But they also made a big announcement about where Project Ara is going to go next. Specifically, Puerto Rico. So they've got a lot of things that they got to sort out with this whole project. FDA regulations, they've got to figure out how to market it. They got to figure out how to communicate with people. So they've decided that they're going to go to the island of Puerto Rico, because there they can sort through all the FDA filing things and actually go through that whole process and do that like they would if they're going to launch in America. But it's a much smaller market. It's more manageable. If they mess it up, it's not that big of a deal. So they're allowed to experiment a little bit more. But one of the most fascinating things that they're dealing with is they have, and if you've, you know, we talk about the TED Talks like all the time, but there's quite a few famous TED Talks about the paradox of choice and the idea that the more choice people have, oftentimes the less satisfied they are with their final decision, although they should be more satisfied because they're more likely to get what they want. And the classic example is, if you walk into a Walmart and they have a wall of Wrangler jeans, all you can do is pick your size. You don't get to pick your fit and style. They're all exactly the same. If you walk into a Levi's store, they've got 100 different colors. They've got 20 different fits. They've got 20 different sizes and length and hips and everything. So you can really get something that fits you exactly and is exactly your style and everything. But all of the choice actually ends up giving you because it's unlikely that anything is perfect, what you actually end up with is a handful of really good choices, and you can only pick one. And so you go with the one that you kind of feel all best about, but you regret the other choices you could have made. And so there's this sort of a tipping point with choice where you want more than what Walmart gives, because that can lead to dissatisfaction. But if you get too much choice, you actually get people even more dissatisfied, even though they actually end up with something that's better fitting and better looking than they would otherwise. The paradox of choice. Well, Google's very afraid of this with Project Aura because it is the pinnacle of choice.
Right.
You can get anything and you can swap out a lot. So how do you market this in such a way that people get what they want and get what they need and they're happy with the choice? So that's actually the biggest thing they claim that they're studying with the pilot program in Puerto Rico.
Choice is a tricky thing, man.
Really is.
The answer is three. Give me three choices. Done.
Three choices. The market can bear three things, two major winners and a also-ran.
Well, even within the brands, you get three choices.
Yeah.
That's the optimum, I should say. And when you look around, most companies stick with that.
Yeah. Apple.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an example. They're a classic. You get three size hard drives. What does that mean? Does that mean they only have, does that mean they have three of every module, a high-end module, a low-end module, and for three processors, a high-end processor, a low-end processor, and a mid-range processor, and three cameras, and three antennas, and three screens, and three speakers, and then...
Well, so, I mean, they're headed down the track of mass customization, right? And, which I think Dell was one of the first ones to do really good at it. And the way that you do it is you say, here's a recommended start, and then you can go in and tweak if you wanted to. You just don't start with a blank canvas. Here's what I recommend, and now what's important to you? Camera? All right, let's goose that one up to you. You don't care about storing music and photos? All right, well, let's take down the storage. I don't know if you would do those two together, but the point being that, and then you would present here's the low-end basic model, here's the top of the line, and then you could have your middle-of-the-road one. And on some of them, you're going to have an option, some of them you won't, it'd be like... or you have like the cameraman's package. It's got the camera, it's got the flash, it's got the storage, that kind of stuff. Or you've got the gamer one that's got the high-end processor, good size hard drive, the amazing screen.
Yeah, but it gets rid of it. I say it gets rid of the camera and puts another GPU there.
Yeah, something like that. It puts something. So. I could see where you've create different styles that are complete and you can just one click buy that if you wanted to, but you also have the option to go in and customize it and tweak it a little bit if you wanted, which is what the computer companies do now. Cause I mean, essentially that's all computers are.
That's true.
And they've managed to mask it in such a way where you can't tell that they're modular.
Yeah.
And then you just ship the whole thing like that. And so your cart would just say one.
Right. I like it.
All right, cool. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm definitely, it's something that I'm following and keeping my eye on.
And they run Android or something else?
yes. Okay. It runs Android.
Just checking.
But I like it. Are you going?
I don't know. I guess I can't. Let's stick with the Google for a little bit here. We've got like three other articles.
Okay, you start talking. I'll be right back.
Alrighty. I guess I'm going to start talking about something. All right. The first one we're going to talk about is Google Glass. Turns out that they're done exploring that program and are, they're not shutting it down, but they're kind of shutting it down. So Google Glass, we all know what that is. We've talked about it multiple times. It was part of Google X. This week it came out that you can no longer buy those devices. They're done with them. And instead, Google Glass is now going to move under Tony Fadell and the Nest brand, where they can focus a little bit more on getting the functionality and the aesthetics right on this thing.
Yeah, so, also they're about to kill it.
Sorry, what?
I said also they're about to kill it.
No. I don't think they will. I think, well, let me rephrase that. In its current incarnation, yes. But I think they'll come back with another round or two of it. I'm kind of like, what have they been doing for the last couple years?
On it? I don't know. Suffering silently? I get the feeling that, yeah, this is an interesting move. Because I feel like, you know, we talked about it with our predictions, where it's like Google Glass just feels stagnated. It's not done. They've already announced that Intel is going to make the next round of systems on a chip that are going to run the whole thing. So it's obviously, you know, that's a big partner. Those are big contracts. It's not on the way out necessarily. Well, should say it's not. It doesn't have its head in the guillotine, but it's moving and not in a happy direction. I think it's interesting that they're moving it out of Google X, because Google X is supposed to be this doesn't make any money. It's sort of a moonshot type thing. We're trying to pioneer a new way to do stuff. It's as much an advertising budget as it is a we're going to change the future. You know, Google X is an interesting thing. And projects within Google X have certain goals, and one of their big goals is to make Google look really cool and future. you know, and it's like, you know, I don't mean to be too cynical, but it's just the reality of it. It's they do some really cool projects that I get really excited about, but they don't want to make money off of Google. They keep saying they don't plan on making money off of the Google self-driving cars by selling them. So what's the point of it? Well, they want to be a foundational technology so that they're getting all of your data. That's a big part of it. And probably the biggest part of it, but a big part of it too is we talk about Google cars all the time and talk about Google, and the news talks about Google, and everybody talks about Google, and it's a good advertising campaign. And the Nest team, Tony Fadell's team, they're sort of a hardware product team. They don't care as much about making Google look cool. They're not about, you know, no, a lot of those products aren't tagged with the Google name. Nest, for example, it's not Google's Nest. It's just the Nest. And that whole team, they're very hardware. It's all hardware oriented, which is why it moved to that team, because it's a piece of hardware, but they're also much more make money oriented. They're much more consumer product oriented. And so I would guess that two things happened. Number one, Google Glass has not been a very good advertising campaign for Google in the last few years.
Yeah, that's true.
It makes them look goofy. It's embroiling them in all sorts of controversies. And so from, you know, if Google X's whole goal is to be a positive PR thing, or if it's not, if one of its goals is to be a positive PR, it's failing there. And then the other thing is that a $1,500 pair of glass that has a 4-hour battery life doesn't succeed as a usable consumer product. So they got to do something about that. And Tony Fadell's team, the, you know, designer of the original, not designer, but the engineer behind the original iPod, he's all about mobile computing and figuring out how to make batteries last all day on mobile devices. It really isn't his bell horn of engineering. And if anybody's going to succeed at taking the foundations of what they have and turn it into a consumer price friendly product, well, Tony's probably the best guy at Google to do it. So, to me, how I read all this is, you know, the acknowledgement of the fact that it's not nearly as hip and cool as it was. And in order to get it to the next phase, it's got to be affordable. It's got to be usable. And I think you're going to see it start to hardcore do what we've been talking about it doing for the last year and a half, which is fight for niche areas. Have it be like a GoPro where every sport dude wants one, because you can see the track ahead of you and it's giving you up to the date information about your how fast you're going on your snowboard going down the hill, or it's you know, or it's telling the doctor don't cut that vein, you'll kill the patient, or you know, it's telling the firefighters he's in this room that's burning down in front of you. You know, it's those sorts of things. And building a product that works in those environments is something that I think they're going to focus on. Focus less on the catch-all solution and more on a device that actually works and has a purpose. That's my guess.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I appreciate you agreeing with me on that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think that it's just going to go dark for a few years.
Yep.
But
I don't know if it'll go dark, but I think it'll be go quiet. I think it'll be a very, very, very quiet year for Google Glass.
Well, it was one of those where they clearly Sergey Brin was super pumped about it.
Yeah.
A little overly pumped about it. Hyped it a little too much before he should have, and they're learning.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I wonder, the one thing I do wonder, and you almost will never be able to tell, figure this out, is if Tony Fadell was told, hey, fix Google Glass, or if Tony Fadell said, hey, I can fix Google Glass. Because that is a completely different attitude and expectation, and the future of the platform is very different depending on how that conversation happened. And unfortunately, I have no idea, and it's very difficult to tell, you know, and you won't know until you see the products that come out, which one happened. Because I would say if they stay the course, but it just gets slowly more affordable, but it stays more or less the same concept, probably he was told to fix it and said, okay, if you see them make some pretty radical changes, but it just keeps the spirit of the thing, it's a camera on your face, but it does, you know, but they're moving it, you know, becomes a moving target. Well, you know, trying to define it at least, then I would say that was probably him saying, I got an idea. I think we can actually make this work still. Don't kill it yet. But it'll be interesting.
Yeah. That will be interesting. I wonder if we'll learn more. Never mind. We won't. I was going to say we'd learn more like Google I/O or something, but no, they'll just ignore it.
Exactly.
Dude, this is like conference season, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah.
I think it'd be funny to be like a road warrior one year. Just be like, start off with CES, just because like Mobile World Congress is happening, and then there's the auto show, and oh man, just like
there's some guys that get to do that, and that would be awesome.
It would be awesome for like just once.
Yeah, the third year I think it would get real tired, because the problem with conferences is I've gone to enough conferences that the first year's really cool, because it's like it's all new and you don't feel like you get to see everything. The second year, you recognize a lot of it, so you actually get to kind of get deep into the field and see all the cool stuff. The third year, there's not really enough new stuff to keep your attention for 2 days, and it's really starting to get boring. So I feel like the first two years of it would be very fun. And the third year would be kind of like, oh, I got to do this again. Oh, jeez. I got to go see these guys do a demonstration of their technology that looks like it's only gone forward in 6 weeks in the last 2 years. Awesome.
Yeah, or that I know we'll never see the light of day.
Yeah, looking at you, Oculus.
Before that, I was naive and innocent.
Exactly. All
right, well, let's keep going with the Google stuff here. You got a couple.
Google. Google it. So Google's got this huge bug in Android. And it has to do with, what's it? It's called, it has to do with the, web view component of Android 4.3 and below. And this is embedded in the browser controller powered by a version of WebKit rendering engine used in Android apps. So WebKit is the open source engine that Apple started to sort of figure out what HTML5 was going to be, since the W3 was taking forever to figure it out. Google took over the project and kept it going for a very long time. And then finally, last year, they forked WebKit into Blink, which is their own proprietary engine. And so now nobody's really using Blink except Mozilla and Opera. But so that gives you a little bit of background, but they got a bug in it, and somebody found the bug, and Google said, "Don't worry about it. It's already fixed. It doesn't affect us. We use a different tool in Blink, and so that, you know, that's not a bug we have to worry about." And everybody was like, "Yeah, but only Android 4.4 and above uses Blink." nobody else does. And Google said, "Well, that's a bummer. Buy a newer phone." And
nice.
Yeah. And it's fascinatingly complicated, and it has to do with how Android is set up. They are getting beat up over this, and I think it's a little unfair, which is why I wanted to bring it up. But there's this really, it has to do with the weirdness of how Android was constructed. So Android, and we've talked about this before, but it's worth repeating, bringing it up again. The problem is that Google 4.4, Android 4.4, they introduced this thing called, these like core system components that ran in software. They are not part of the core OS. What they basically did was they took the OS and all the structures of the operating system, and they gutted it all. And they left this really empty shell, which they called Android 4.4. And then they took all of the components of Android, and they put them into this sort of software section of the operating system that they could go in and easily change. And the reason why they did that was because the whole fragmentation, the Fragmentroid thing that was going on. And effectively what was happening was, to update problems like this required them to go through the OEMs, because the OEMs all had different versions of Android running. And so they had to push out the solution to the OEMs, and the OEMs had to push out the solution onto their own proprietary software. And it was driving Google nuts, because they couldn't introduce a new feature and actually get it supported on everything. So at Android 4.4, basically drew a line in the sand and said, okay, everything after this will have a solution to that problem, that will allow us to push out updates, push out bug fixes, and to add new features to older operating systems without having the OEMs get in our way. And they can directly update these core services within Android. So they do that now, and it works pretty dang well. And it has allowed them to basically keep Android 4.4 and 5.0 are not nearly as fragmented. And from OEM to OEM, there's very little fragmentation as a result, because they're able to update the important core functions as time goes on. But everything below that obviously is not affected by this new change. And so Google's policy up to this point has been to try to fix all those problems. This is the first real time that in a big way they've decided to just say, no, we're not going to do that. If you'd like that fixed, we suggest going to Samsung or HTC or Motorola or whoever the heck made your phone, but stop bothering us. Which is an interesting, I think it makes sense. I think the company has to do that at some point. I think Microsoft would make it work, which is kind of the difference between the two companies. But I don't know. I think going forward, you'll see this more and more where they'll just treat Android 4.3 and below as a wasteland. That's not their problem. You know, you got it for us from free. What did you expect? It's an interesting direction they've chosen.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't. I mean, it definitely is not. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be customer first. That's how I want to say it.
Yeah, and I think what they're basically saying is we don't want to fight with these customers anymore because it's too hard. They're not very good at that, and they're kind of going the way of Apple. You know, it's kind of an Apple-ish thing to do, to say your hardware is 2 years old. You're 3 years old. Get over it. Buy a new Mac. Buy a new iPhone.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I don't blame them for it, but I feel like there was a better way to do it from a PR perspective. That they messed up, I will say, I think. Just sort of didn't really get that message out there very well. But I don't think it's a ridiculous position that they're taking. But I obviously we'll see that more and more, though, where they're all going to focus less and less on anything that's not something that they can control. You know, and thus ends the realm of open and free software. This is done. It's over. Nobody can ever talk about that again and pretend like it means anything. From an Android perspective. Okay, the next story that I wanted to talk about a little bit, and I thought this was just an interesting thought piece. This has been true for a while, but statistically, rich people don't buy Android phones. They buy iPhones. Just like...
Yeah, shocker.
Yeah. It's not 100% true, but it's, you know, 90% true. It's true enough where big companies make big financial decisions based on what sort of a device you're going to buy. Now, somebody pointed out how this was going to be a dilemma for the future of wearables. And basically what the thought piece was, and I thought this was interesting, Apple is not opening up their operating system to third-party watches, right? Not really. I mean, you've got obviously... Oh, that's not true. They're not going to give, like, the Apple Watch cool interface and seamless integration to other watches, not at first. Stuff like your Pebble, it has an app that works with it, works pretty well, I'm told. But presumably it won't have the same slickness of the Apple Watch. Well, rich people buy luxury watches. Rich people buy iPhones, not Android phones. And up to this point, the thought has been, as companies like Tag Heuer and other luxury watchmakers get into the smartwatch market, as Apple kind of opens this up to the idea that more expensive watches can be out there, they're probably going to turn to Android first or Android Wear first as their operating system of choice. The problem is, rich people don't buy Androids. They buy iPhones. And so the argument that this article was making, and I tend to agree with it, is that there's not going to be a smartphone market for, or there's not going to be a smartwatch market for luxury watches outside of the Apple Watch. There will be other options, but nobody's going to buy them. And Apple is going to be really incentivized to not open up their protocols, not play friendly with Android Wear, as long as possible, to sort of lock in this device. And so if you are the sort of person who wants a smartwatch and can afford a luxury watch, you're really going to only have one Apple. One Apple. That's right. There's a Freudian slip. One option, and that's Apple. Which is kind of a... That's got to be a nice place to be as a company. Once you sort of work through the logic of that and realize that, I mean... Wow. That's a cool place to be. Now all they have to do is make a very cool, hip watch, and they're good to go.
That's it. Which, it looks like they're working on it, so it's okay.
Yeah. I kind of want the gold one. I'm not going to be able to afford the gold one. I'll bet I can afford the stainless steel one, though. I'm already talking myself into a more expensive watch. I can't believe it. Oh, by the way, BT Dubs, the rumor mill is end of February that they'll announce the announce it officially.
Yeah, that's what I saw, along with the new MacBook Air.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it was pretty nondescript. I could see that, I don't think nonspecific is maybe the better word. And there was it almost sounded like somebody was starting a rumor and saying rumors are, which I have on occasion done in my real life, where so everybody said that they're gonna go hang out here after this event's done. You said everyone's saying it, then everyone trusts you. It's sort of like making a website that cites a Wikipedia article about some fact, and then citing that website in your Wikipedia article. And so all of a sudden it becomes sort of a self-cyclical referencing thing. But eventually some teacher will reference your Wikipedia article as well, and they'll reference your reference as their reference. But it gets so obscured eventually that it just becomes fact, even though it never actually – started anywhere. It's all made up. It was a XKCD did a comic on that. How nice, that happens. Nice.
Yeah, I think I remember that one.
But
well, we do that stuff here where we'll say something and then it will come true shortly thereafter.
Which is
so, yeah, we're highly familiar with that concept here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Alright. Okay. Cool. What do you want to talk about next? We just have a ton of stuff.
Oh, man. So, I think...
There's technically one more Google story if you want to talk about it.
Which one?
Translate.
Oh, yeah. This is awesome. Have you tried out the new Translate?
No.
Okay, Google Translate. Do you have Google Translate app on your phone?
No.
Oh, you should. Even if you don't need it, it's awesome. I've had it forever, and this last update is, it's now officially the future. Like, we're fully here. Get excited. So the new Translate does some really cool things. It's got three different little buttons for your input area. Obviously, you can touch it. Comes with a keyboard, and you can put in, my name is Matthew, right? And it will automatically translate to...
Mateo.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Mi nombre es Mateo.
Yeah, so it's got it down like English to Spanish. You can also do, I like this one.
我的名字叫马修.
It's Chinese for my name is Matthew. Or we can do, let's try,
Nous sommes Charlie.
We are Charlie. Getting a little political. So in French. So it's pretty cool. It's a really cool. And I've been using that forever. But that's just the cool thing that they did now is that actually works offline, which nice. Is being impressive and useful
and helpful when you're
abroad and don't have T-Mobile. Yes. I have T-Mobile, so I can use it whenever. But they've also got an automatic thing for like writing, which allows you to, you know, write by hand, and it will translate it into, you know, real letters, which is cool. And, you know, so it's doing writing detection, you know, classic Google stuff. But then they got a little bit crazier. They also do, now they do a microphone. So you can, and they've had the microphone functionality for a little bit where you talk into it and it'll spit out the translation for you. Now it does automatic language detection, and it allows you to sort of like talk back and forth like you're in the UN. So I had me and a coworker. Wow. I was speaking English. He spoke Spanish. We didn't tell it what we were speaking. It just figured it out and translated it for us back and forth so we could talk to each other. It's pretty cool. It was a little more difficult for him because he understood both languages. So it was like he kept getting like, I already heard that. And then my favorite one, though, and this is cool because I've seen demos for this sort of thing before on other technology, but you're just sort of like, this doesn't seem like it would work really well, or like it just seems like it, gimmicky. But it was the idea of you take a camera, you show the camera, you know, and you take a picture of a sign, and then it will automatically put the text over top of the sign in the right place, so you don't have to type it in or anything. And it will just do character detection of different languages and turn it into the right language, or turn it into your language or a foreign language. So the obvious use case there is you're in China, there's a sign on the wall, and you're like, I'm pretty sure this is food, but I can't tell what kind of food. So you would hold up your camera, and it would just automatically translate everything for you and turn it into... So this is Chinese food, and we serve Chinese food here. Get some pot stickers. And
OCR, I like it.
Yeah, what's
OCR? Optical character recognition.
Yeah, exactly. And it works
and
great.
And then translation on top of it, I get it.
Yes. It's it works great. It works really, really well. And what's really cool is they do like all the color matching. They color match the background and the foreground, so it's sort of like it does it all live, so it's as you're like holding it there, everything moves around and stays in position where it's supposed to. It's really impressive. I mean, it's just a cool, very, 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 very cool technology. I'm very excited about it. I'm probably going to be going to Singapore in a week or two, and I cannot wait to try it out. Everything is in English in Singapore, so it's not really going to be useful, but
also true.
I'll translate it to Spanish and show it off to all my friends over there.
That works. But
yeah, it's awesome. It's so cool. I like it. The future's so great. Like, and we're one step closer to the Babel Fish, the dream of Douglas Adams in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I was listening to a podcast. It was Tim Ferriss interviewing this security guy who does like cyber security and cybercrime stuff. Mm-hmm. You'd find it interesting, by the way. And he made a comment where he was like, you know, we're just at the beginning of the internet. He's like, right now, the internet is the size of a golf ball. And in the near future, it's going to grow to be the size of the sun. And... he's like, we're literally just like the tip of the iceberg right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty cool.
I believe it.
Like, I can't even imagine what that means, but that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he has a hard time imagining it. Just sort of, it's a trend. It seems obvious when you think about stuff like this and you're like, we can do that. And you're like, yeah. And the crazy part to me is it just goes by with such like little renown that this is where we are right now. Like, you know, expensive translation services, yeah, they're cool and they're still necessary for certain tasks. But, you know, by and large, this is a free consumer, you know, grade product that works well enough for business people. That's incredible. And it works on the fly. That's the best part. It's such a great time to be alive. Oh, man. Oh, man. I love it.
So, just so our listeners know, my iTunes is flipping out right now. I think I've got it so that you can't hear anything when it decides to randomly start playing music. But just so you know.
That is weird. It?
Sorry.
I don't hear it.
You can't hear it, but I get the notification all of a sudden. And it's been like every 5 minutes it goes, song started. I'm like, huh. That's interesting.
Why are you doing that?
Tap that to start. Yeah, I'm also being told that I need to upgrade to a new version of Google Talk, which, yeah, I think I got rid of those beeps too. Oh, dude. So, yeah, technology is amazing and also frustrating at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's perfect.
Oh, it's true. Oh, that's very true.
But what do we...
I don't know. What's one of the most popular programming languages out there?
Oh, this is awesome. Swift. It's on its way up. This is actually just a really cool chart that this article came with. People were getting really jacked about Swift and it moving up the course. But this Red Monk, this organization, did a ranking. They did a scatter plot graph. Where they ranked popularity ranks on Stack Overflow. So that
love that website.
It is great. By number of tags, and then they did a popularity rank on GitHub by number of projects. So the number of projects in a specific language versus the number of questions about a language. So it's an interesting way to how many people are actually building, source projects with this language versus how many people are trying to learn more about it. So you got some like weird languages like SQL. Not a lot of people are actually building projects with SQL, but everybody wants to know about it. There's tons of them. And XML. I think the reason why you see that is because oftentimes you're interfacing with those two things and
right.
you don't need to build it. You just need to understand it. On the other side, like TeX, which is your it's kind of a scripting language for font stuff. It's used by high powered publishers. That one's got pretty popular projects, but it doesn't ever talk to anything else. It's just designed for making beautiful script stuff. So there's not a lot of questions about it. Like you learn the language for like in a class about publishing and then you just do stuff. It doesn't get moved around. Most of the languages though kind of sit on this sort of this line, this trend line down the center of where, you know, about as many their popularity of how many people are making projects with them versus how many people are asking questions sit somewhere in the middle. And so you get this interesting scatter plot of what are the most popular languages. Things like Objective-C kind of low down on the list, which is interesting. Fortran. Yes. Yeah. No, Objective-C++. Sorry. No, that's wrong. Whoa. Yeah. Okay. It's important to read the entire name.
I thought that was upper right.
I was really surprised by that. But it's funny, a lot of these languages I recognize but have never used before, like XBase, LiveScript, barely know anything about them. And as you'd expect, Objective-C++, didn't even know that was a thing. You start moving up into the middle region and you start to get stuff that I do recognize, like Pascal. That's a good one to know anything about if you want a job. Fortran, same thing. You want a job? Learn that language. They're really awful because they're really old. So being good at them is a very valuable skill. Arduino starts moving you up to your middle third, or your top third, I mean. It's kind of on the bottom of that one. But it has been passed in the popularity overall rankings by Swift. Swift is a little more popular by project than Visual Basic, but people have less questions. VB, I'm telling you, the only reason VB is like sky high on the popularity on Stack Overflow, that is college kids trying to figure out how to pass their introduction to programming classes.
yeah, either that or you're trying to do something in Excel, read about it and go, oh, geez, that's too complicated. Never mind.
Yeah, you know what? That's, yeah. Except MATLAB is right next to VB, and MATLAB is the same thing. those are college kids that are asking questions than building projects.
Kind of excited to see that R is way up there. It's ahead of Swift, by the way.
It is ahead of Swift, but not for long.
Which is the stats programming language.
Yes.
Super powerful.
Perl beats R by a little bit, but it's kind of, I'd say it's neck and neck. People build more projects with Perl, but people talk about R more. Objective-C, pretty high up there. CSS, barely, not even a scripting language. How did that get its own slot? It's terrible. C++, it is quite popular. Ruby and C#, quite popular too. PHP, kind of top of your crown. And I am very glad to see that the three, I get made fun of because, like, when people ask me what languages are you good at, I always say Java, JavaScript, and PHP. And they're like, those are the only ones you're good at? This makes me feel so much better. Yeah. Those are the only
validated
ones. Yeah, because that's the only three you need. Those are the three most popular languages ever, you know, that anybody uses.
So I had someone, this relates to this. When I talk with college kids and do the whole mentoring thing, I tell them that you will stand out if you can find interesting intersections between your degree and studies. So it's this idea of if you take two things that are seemingly different and put them together, you know, it makes for an interesting combination. And I went, classic example, and this one's kind of been done to death, so maybe don't pick this one. But classic example is, you know what, I'm an engineer. I'm going to go to business school. Those are two different things. Combine them. Now all of a sudden you become very interesting to companies. And so those are kind of examples that I give. I know for me, I became very interested in a hire because I was in business school. I knew all the marketing stuff, but on the side, I had learned how to program websites. And more specifically, I had learned how to interact with databases, how to create and query and, you know, do all the things that you do with databases.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they went,
work with databases. Huh,
data scientist. Interesting.
Yeah.
And I had an interesting intersection. And so that's what I tell people. I'm like, what are you interested in? What's a skill that you can continue to purposely develop that will complement your thing? I know I had one person that I was talking with them. She was into computer science. She was getting a dual major of computer science and English. I was like, all right. Okay, that's an interesting combination. I'm like, I don't know what you could.
By the way, she's going to learn techs. I guarantee it.
yeah. And so but again, it was this idea of like, I'm like, that's interesting. And that's what employers are now looking for. They don't just, unless you're like, you know, amazing at a singular thing, like they'll find more value in combinations now. Go ahead.
I had been told over the years, and I tell other people this, whatever you're doing, if you can learn statistics too, you're invaluable, especially as engineers. Like, oh, you're into civil engineering? Cool. Are you good at statistics? Get better. Because that's a difficult cross-section that, you know, and it's yeah, like you said, if you can take two seemingly unconnected things and connect them, and especially if you can do two that are not normally connected or one that people are generally bad at, that's huge.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So all that to say, there was someone who was asking me about that, business student, and she goes, well, I want to learn a programming language. What do you recommend? And I was kind of like, I don't know why you're asking me, but what the heck? I'll give you an answer. And I was kind of like, dude, that's been played before, but, you know, whatever. Okay, cool. You know, I'm like, this is a classic example of what people do. But, you know, that's fine. So I said, I'm sorry, what?
It is better than her not doing it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm with her. Well, it was like, she didn't know anything. And so she was just embarking on something new. It wasn't necessarily an area of interest, per se. She just like, oh, this could be valuable. I'm like, yeah, you and like the other half of the population has figured this out. So, you know, whatever. The point being, because I haven't even gotten to that yet. I was like, she was asking specifically, like, I want to learn how to build websites. What do you recommend? I was like, well, you know, there's the classics out there that was probably a good start, which is PHP and, you know, you're going to do HTML, CSS, of course, and then you're going to tag on PHP, JavaScript, and SQL. Like, you get those, you could pretty much do anything. I didn't talk about Ruby, and even though apparently that's amazing, but I don't know it. But then I was like, you know, I very quickly followed up with, you know, if you really want to stick with what's hot right now, you might want to look pretty closely at like Swift and Java instead. Yeah. Like, because those are the two main mobile platforming languages, and it's more with the times. I mean, websites are always going to be around. Don't get me wrong. Look at that. Song just turned on again. But those are the two languages that are the hot topics right now. And if you're talking about graduating in 2 years, I'd rather say I know Swift than I know HTML.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. One of the things that I've talked about...
They're harder.
Yeah, it is harder. I've had this conversation actually a couple times in the last few months, and my opinion has been this. If you've never done anything with programming before, I always recommend starting with Java. It's a little bit harder to get started than C++, but the moment you get going, it's 100 times more, you know, faster than C++. C++ has a really low entry to getting the first, you know, hello. It's easier to do hello world in C++ than Java. It's harder to do just about everything else. So I always recommend Java. Once you get hello world working, then it's not even the same world. And the best part is it more quickly introduces you to the bigger concepts of objective programming. And
yeah.
It allows you to do non-objective programming within its confines, but it's more scalable than C++. And so I tend to not recommend C++ for people who are just learning. But if somebody already has a sense of how to program, they've taken some programming classes before, they know the basics of logic and objective programming and stuff like that, I'm telling them like crazy, learn Swift right now. Spend 2-3 hours, you know, put 2 hours a week aside, four half-hour sessions, 1 3-hour jam session. I don't care, but put that time aside every week and try a tutorial. Just start with the first tutorial, how to build an app that says Hello World. And then it's going to introduce you to some stuff you don't understand. So look up a tutorial, figure that out. And that's the process, because right now with what's going on with Swift is everybody is learning it, but it's still a small enough code base to learn. And what's going to happen is at WWDC this year, they're going to introduce 1,000 new API. And you'll still be able to learn it, but now you're 1,000 API behind. And if you can start right now and looking at C++ or looking at Swift, and the prediction, the bigger point of this article was that they basically said, Swift is skyrocketing up that, and it is expected to be at the top right, you know, by the end of the year, really behind Objective-C, but in the same realm as Perl, R, and Scala, which is, those are big languages that, and those come with some real jobs. So if you can do that with Swift, and it's funny, I'm working with an app team, and we keep saying, we just brought on a new iOS guy. And one of our big questions was, do you do anything with Swift? And he said, yeah, I mean, I'd love to, because I want to learn it more and I want to get better at it. And I said, you know, can you build the entire thing in Swift? And he said, probably not. And I said, I don't need you to. I'm like, that's fine. I'm just getting your sense. But I said, I don't really need you to. I just need some of it to be able to be built in Swift so that when we go to investors, we can say we're using the most advanced language out there. We're the most advanced technology. We're aiming for the future, even if it's just two objects that are written in Swift, just so we can say, yeah, we're using Apple's new Swift language. It's very popular. It makes you sound very cool if you have any idea what you're talking about. And like we said, posts like this make me feel very good about myself, and sort of my predictions of where this all will go.
Yeah, that's cool. I like it. It's cool. That's a good graph. Good shirt.
Yeah. So I've got two more. You got two more? Yeah.
Boom. That's amazing. All right. So, I'll go. Then you go. Yeah. Then I'll go. Then you go.
That sounds good.
Mine aren't nearly as exciting, but that's okay. So Capital One is kind of on a buying spree.
That's not true.
They're always just buying stuff. But they recently bought a new app that may or may not use Swift. It's hard to say. Called
Knowing them,
Level Money.
I'll bet it doesn't.
Probably doesn't. It's an app that you hook up all your accounts and they track your spending and they tell you how much you have left to spend for the month or the day or whatever time period you want.
I don't want to know.
I think
mind your own business. Thing.
Yeah, they're right. And so it's cool where they say, like, spendable. Here's how much you have to stick with whatever your budget is. And they've made it a very easy interface. And so Capital One bought them. They acquired, ING Direct a few years ago. And
so Capital One 360.
Yep, that's the one.
They hold most of my liquid cash.
There you go. And looks like they may be getting into the money tracking game of things.
Watch out, Mint.
It'd be fascinating. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was like Mint was, you know, they ruled the world in terms of tracking, and I still think they do. And I highly recommend you use them.
So another app that should mind its own business.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is when what was the name of that company? Square Bank, was that it? That doesn't sound right at all. Simple, there we go. I knew it was an S. When Simple, the bank came out and they were like, you know, use this card and it's all smart and simple and stuff like that. And they were going to track your expenses for you and help you, you know, understand your spending. They were like, ooh, Mint competitor, look out. And turns out they've been having trouble scaling, so there's bummer for them. And so Mint's just kind of remained king of the hill. And Level came out. We actually talked about it on the podcast when they came out, and I tried it, and I was like, man, you know, it's okay. I'll stick with Mint. But now they're going to get a whole lot more. You ready for this? Capital infused into their company. And so we'll probably see some more coming out of them as they grow, which would be pretty cool. To see Mint get a competitor, and I don't know, I use them as a savings account, so they're not really going to help me very much with tracking my spending, but maybe they're like, hey, we can help you track your spending if you switch over to a checking account. But anyways,
it's cool. It's interesting.
It's cool, dude.
Yeah, they're an okay company.
Helping people manage their money is important.
Capital One is my first credit card. That's the only reason I really have a bad taste in my mouth, and it wasn't their fault. I can't. It's unfair for me to hold them responsible for my ridiculous spending habits when I first got that credit card. So Nintendo, speaking of ridiculous ideas, is confusing the situation more and irritating me a lot by launching a new, finally, 3D or XL for America.
3DS XL. Okay.
Yes. They and actually announced this device for Japan about a month or two ago. We brought it up and I was kind of irritated back then, but at the time there was
why? What makes it irritating to you?
Well, because they're adding a couple of new buttons. It's the same form factor. It's a better screen, but they're adding more buttons, which means there's going to be new games specifically designed for the new system. And it's a new system, and they've just, like, they're... It's irritating to me because I have the 3DS and XL, and I don't want to have to buy a new system to be able to play new games, which means if it doesn't work with my system, I will just not be buying new games. And, you know...
I cannot wait until Sony releases a new PlayStation.
Thankfully, they do a 10-year cycle. It's and I got right at the beginning of this one, so it's, you know, I got at least 5 years before this is going to get really irritating again. And I'll probably do what I did last time, which is wait two more generations, then get back in and be like, guys, do you want to know how amazing video games has gotten? I mean, it will blow your mind. I did that to Timmy. Oh my gosh, I did that to our cousin Timmy. I've been telling him like crazy, dude. You gotta buy Shadow of Mordor. This is like the greatest game ever. I mean, it is so fun. It blows my mind how good this game is. It's amazing. Timmy was like, okay, I'll get it. He finally downloaded it. He goes, dude, it's just Assassin's Creed in Lord of the Rings universe. Like, it's fun, but I don't know. I'm not that like jazzed about it. I was like, Timmy,
it's not mind blowing.
I've literally never played Assassin's Creed. Sorry. Turns out one of the, you know, biggest game franchises in the last 10 years is amazing, and I'm just finding this out. It's very exciting for me, and it happens to be in Lord of the Rings universe. So this is like the best news I've gotten all week, okay? Like, I don't know what to tell you.
It's kind of funny.
I did not.
I mean, that makes sense, but I like that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Hey, I've had those, right? I think I've even done them on the podcast. I'm like, this is amazing. You should check it out. And you're like, yeah, we all
know that. Thanks, James.
I watched this movie recently, and it was so amazing. You're like, yeah, that's why I won an Oscar.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you agree.
It deserved that win.
We've done that. But yeah, we've definitely done that. Anyways, Nintendo's that's about funny. To irritate me. I hope it doesn't work poorly for them. My biggest irritation about it, because I honestly don't play my 3DS that much. I play it occasionally, like four games, and I will play all that I need to play. But what the real irritation is for the company in general, and I think the problem is that they finally talked me into buying a system, and now they're not going to support it anymore. And I know a lot of people that jumped on the 3DS XL bandwagon with the latest Pokemon, like I did just a year ago, and they moved a ton of systems, and now they're bringing out a new system, and I'm like, I'm not gonna upgrade. I'm not a new customer. Like, support me and I'll buy games and you guys will stay around as a company. But they're going the way of Sega, ironically, which is, it's just frustrating to watch. They're not. That's the big. That was what happened. And this is like literally what happened to Sony. They came out with too many systems in too short of a time period. People couldn't keep up with the hardware costs, and they didn't support systems for a long enough period of time. People got distracted, and when they finally came out with a well-supported long-term system, the Dreamcast, it was too late. People had they'd already diminished the brand too much, and the company eventually got parsed out, and part of it got sold to Nintendo, which is why I now play Sonic the Hedgehog on my 3DS XL. But that's how it rolls.
Well, hopefully that's not the case, but
hopefully,
yeah, they are targeting an audience that you know, there's always a bunch of new kids coming out, but I don't know. I guess that was true with Sega.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
It's complicated. I will say it's complicated, but in the mobile gaming arena, there is some incredibly stiff competition between NVIDIA tablets and Razer and the iPhone. You know,
maybe it was part of that response, you know, where they're like, yeah, we got to switch over to an annual release update thing.
Maybe. I doubt it.
I don't want to give them that much credit.
I'm going to say, I could understand. It's funny. If all this was an improvement in screen and processing power, so that the thing, you know, the batteries last longer and the screen looks better, I could totally get behind that. Wouldn't bother me at all. My problem is they added extra buttons, which means games won't, they'll be able to release games that I can't play. And I think that was a real, I feel like that was a misstep.
Well, it's either that or publishers will go. Not everyone has the extra buttons. They'll get no thanks.
Hopefully. That's what I'm hoping for. Of course, yeah. Nintendo, the who publishes the best games, will make sure to use the buttons. You know.
True. That's true. Annoying. They're stubborn like that.
They are.
That's true. So, have you ever taken a photo on the iPhone using the burst mode?
No, but that's because mine doesn't support it.
Oh. Well, for those of you out there who have cool iPhones, the Apple Photo has an option where you can just hold down the camera shutter and it will just take a bazillion pictures in a very short amount of time.
A burst.
Very useful for when you're... What?
A burst, in short.
Yes, yes. And so then you can go through and you can select the ones that are the best. I wrote this blog post for this new website I'm starting up, and it was about spinning plates. And I wanted a picture of me spinning a plate on my finger. And so I used the burst mode. So Jesse was holding it when burst while I was spinning this plate and trying to get a good picture. And we went through a lot of photos, but I got one. And literally,
that's all you need.
It was pretty funny. I'm not good at spinning plates, for the record. I got one, so it's good. And then I chose that one and automatically deleted the other 200 and some odd photos. So it was cool. And she literally just kind of sat there and like click 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 click, and I'm like, I'm trying to spin it. I really am. So anyways, there's an app out there called Burstio that takes it a step further, where they will take those bursts that are in groups and turn them into animated GIFs or videos. And I saw this and instantly thought of Vine and was like, oh, my brother would love this. So I thought of you, but apparently it's still not an option for you. But that's cool anyways.
Yeah,
there's no sound to it, obviously. It's just stop motion, apparently, you know, essentially.
I like it. I like that. Cool. I like GIFs. Especially because they are such a terrible video codec, but they're like, they're so much fun, and they're just, I don't know. They sit in this weird place of, I wonder if somebody's going to figure out how to deliver GIFs better in a very short period of time. I wonder if there's like, because the problem is video streaming, the whole trick is they send you the next piece of, the piece of information you need right before you need it. And so everything is stacked in time so that ideally you buffer what you need. And then as the next slide, the next sound bit, everything that those come in appropriate proportion, allowing you to, and they send delta information. So they send the changes in pixels as opposed to, the whole thing. And they do all these compression things to get high quality video, blah, 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 blah. Boring. But GIFs are wonderful because they're literally just a stack of frames. It's every frame in the video, and they just cycle through whatever frame rate you're told to cycle through. It's stored in the metadata. And how it delivers the GIF is it literally just sort of says, okay, we're going to like send the pictures in weird order. Sometimes we'll give you the first one, sometimes we'll give you a middle one and the last one, the first one, or like half of the third frame and a quarter of the fourth frame, and just like it just kind of scattershots the whole thing. And I'm sure you've seen this where it'll like the GIF will like start to play and then it'll kind of freeze and stuff. And basically what happens is it shows you everything from the beginning of the GIF till when it runs out of stuff. And what's taking so long is it's loading all the other frames in the background that it can't get to yet because it doesn't know what comes next. It's just a weird codec. I just wonder if we're going to, because it's becoming so popular as a way of sharing short video clips, if there's a way to fix that and if we're going to. I hope so, because it would be really cool if they didn't take years to upload. I send reaction GIFs all the time over iMessages and stuff to friends. I'm a big fan of the reaction GIF stuff.
Huh.
There's one.
You never sent me one.
I'm sorry, I'll do it. There's this subreddit called Wasted GIFs, and it's videos of people getting like falling or getting hit in the head or other terrible things. And all they do is they add the tag "wasted" from Grand Theft Auto, and like the pulse is red. It's like literally getting wasted. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. And the one that was the other day, the one that was at the top of the subreddit was. It's a shot of Elsa doing her crystal blast and hitting Anna in the forehead, and then Anna's body collapsing, and it just goes wasted. And then like the slow motion shot is like Anna like screaming and crying over, or Elsa screaming and crying over Elsa's body. You're just like, I don't know why this is so much horrible than it was in the movie, and it was horrible in the movie. Like, oh, but everyone's like watching somebody like fall off a table and just like flail it, wasted. It's wonderful. I'm a big fan of GIFs. I think for the same reason I'm a fan of Vines. It's just a little more, they're forced to be these short little, you know, videos, and they're quite enjoyable. I like them. But anyways.
Nice.
So the last story. So Tinder bought Tappy. What is Tappy? It's kind of an ethereal picture messaging thing.
I thought it was ephemeral.
Ephemeral? That's what it meant.
They're there and then they're gone.
Yeah, exactly. I can never remember. I get those two words confused every time. But it's not a Snapchat clone. But it's kind of a Snapchat competitor type thing. But Tinder bought it. And the question is, you know, why'd they bought it? What are they trying to compete with Snapchat? And basically everybody was like, no. They just realized that people like to send pictures to each other. And Snapchat is notoriously used for... less clothed pictures, which seems to be really in the bell horn of something an app like Tinder might be interested in doing. You know, like you see some cute girl, she's pretty cute, you're talking a little bit, like, you know, send me a pic of you like wearing this dress, and then they send you a picture that will automatically delete itself, and everybody is like, you know, apps get so weird nowadays, and just sort of like the whole thing is weird. The whole thing is weird, and kind of, you know, people are trying stuff out that so gets a little bit untoward, honestly. And everybody's kind of like, it's so funny because I kept reading, trying to figure out why did this company, you know, what's the thought behind this company? And I realized when I finally like actually read it in, kind of read between the lines, that was the problem, is nobody wants to say that this is they want to facilitate sexting. That's the goal of this. That's what they're trying to do. Nobody will say it. I guess you don't need to say it. I guess kids will figure it out on their own, but seems like it wouldn't be that hard to write that into one of your articles. Like, and I don't feel when once I understood what it was, rereading these articles, I realized, no, everybody gets it. Everybody got it, that's what the point of it is. But they just didn't want to say it. They didn't want to call Snapchat out or Tinder out on it. That's what they're moving into. They know that they know what they are, which is just an incredibly shallow and, you know, we're here for the random hookup, as it were. And, you know, we're going to facilitate that. It's kind of creepy. But, hey, there's money to be made there, yeah?
I'm just quickly reading the article, and it looks like it's more of a they're hiring for the talent, not necessarily for the app itself. But
right, it's definitely being considered an AccuHire. But the idea is they want to get into photo messaging. and doing it in such a way that the photos don't hang around if you don't want them to, which is, you know, when you put two and two together, you get four. What is the point of this app? What is Tinder do? What is it used for? What's it all about? I mean, it makes sense. It's one of those things where I think the kind of the reaction is that I've read in a couple of places is it's almost surprising it took this long for them to get here. Because it just does. It does seem like such an obvious extension of how a big portion of their user base use the app.
Cool.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird note to end on.
I can't remember. That's the app you've used or not.
I have used Tinder. Right? I used Tinder for a short while. The one that I actually had success like going on dates with was Hinge. And that one,
that's right.
That one, like, there's actually the profile's a little bit deeper. You get more pictures. And at the time, you know, a lot of these things are based on communities. It's who's using the app. And when I first started using it, they were like, every single girl on it had a degree. Most of them had an advanced degree. They all had really cool jobs. It was just, that was the community that was using it. I have noticed over the last couple of months that the demographic has spread out a little bit, which, you know, makes it easier on me, I guess. for reasons that I won't necessarily enumerate right now, I have not been using the app actually recently, but
yeah, I've heard the latest rumors.
Yeah. We could.
All right, cool.
We could talk about it offline.
yeah, sounds cool, man. Well, dude, that's the tech news for the week. That's all of it. We covered 100% of it.
I like it.
We left no stone unturned for all of that. That's how comprehensive we are. Let's see here. Slowly switching things over.
You're ready to go.
All right, the beeps are gonna come back. Beep beep. There they are. You hear it? All right, mm-hmm. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you. Those beeps, chimes. Hate you, Google. It's free. I guess I have to put up with it. All right. Anyways, that's good that you can hear it. That means the music will play. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And thank you so much for listening to the show. We really do genuinely appreciate you spending a couple hours with us every single week. We enjoy doing the show, and hopefully you enjoy listening to it. Don't forget that every single article that we talk about, we make sure to link on our show notes at furloughbros.com. All the shows are in order. You're listening to episode 173 right now. Pretty, pretty crazy. And so, again, thank you. We do genuinely appreciate all of you for listening. I am James Furlough, and my... what are you? You're my Oscar award-winning brother, right?
That's me.
That's you, Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time. We'll be right back.